Hello again, this is Rabbi Jeff Sachs of Atid and Web Yeshiva with another installment in our series on the Rambam's Shmona Prakim. We are in the middle of chapter 4 of the 8 chapters. Just a few programming notes. Number one, I am so sorry and I sincerely apologize for the interruptions to our normal schedule. We have not met in a number of weeks due to Hanukkah and Thanksgiving and a trip of mine to England in the middle where I developed this cold. You can probably still hear in my voice, so I apologize for that. It was very cold there, and I brought the cold back. And so I sincerely apologize. It's been so long, I had to go back myself and watch the archives of our last session to just refresh my memory of where we were. And since I think it's probably worthwhile refreshing everybody's memory, and correct me if I'm wrong, I thought it would be worthwhile to just do a little summary, but to do that not by looking at what we learned, but by looking something else in the Rambam that pretty much parallels what we are studying now. The Rambam until now has been, until now in the fourth chapter, I'm not going to review everything from the beginning of the volume, but until now the Rambam has been, in the fourth chapter, has been discussing the method of repairing what we would call in modern parlance personality flaws. That the person is the conglomerate of all of his deot, or midot, his personality traits. And personality traits are really to be thought of as points along a spectrum. That, for example, anger and the complete absence of anger, a kind of emotional blaseness in which you feel nothing, are just two points, the two extremes on one continuum. That stinginess, greed, and the opposite, in which you value money in no manner whatsoever, and you give away everything that you have until you yourself become a pauper, which is of course not anyone's notion of how a person should conduct himself. These two character traits are merely the polar extremes on one spectrum, and the Rambam makes an argument basing himself on Aristotle's idea of the golden mean, that one should find equilibrium on all of these personality traits. The Rambam says that sometimes your personality gets a little thrown out of whack. Gets a little thrown out of whack, so that you need to do some repairing. And in order to repair, you have to sometimes move towards the different center of gravity, so that if we think of the whiteboard here. If we think of a fulcrum or a seesaw. If we think of a seesaw, hold on, let me get the thing here. If we think of the seesaw, imagine that was a straight line, and the fulcrum is here in the middle. So if you put two objects on either end of the seesaw, of the spectrum, that were of equal weight, it would naturally come out to a point of equilibrium. But if one of the poles was much heavier, if on any particular personality trait one of the extremes exercises a much greater pull on you, has a much stronger force of gravity, as it were. So in order to keep balance, it wouldn't be enough to put the fulcrum in the middle. You'd have to move the fulcrum much further to counterbalance it. This is physics 101. I trust that you recall this. It's similar. It's similar, by the way, to our moon, right? Our moon is a very small object. in terms of the, you know, the way the galaxy works. But our moon, the sun, where's the sun? Here's the sun. The sun is really big. Right? It's so big that we can't even fit it all onto our screen. The Earth is, wherever it is, third rock from the sun. There you go. Our moon, which is just this little gray dot, even smaller. Oops. Can I make it even smaller? Our moon. Imagine, you know, this is of course not drawn to scale. The moon is held by the force of gravity of our Earth and the sun, even though the sun is so far away that the moon and the sun appear to be about the same size when we look at them from the Earth. Of course, the sun is many hundreds, thousands of times larger, but the moon has to be so close to the Earth to counter the pull of the gravity of the sun. So the Rambam says a similar thing, although it ends up looking different. The Rambam actually does make use of this metaphor elsewhere, as we'll see. The Rambam is saying that if you have on any spectrum of personality, if you are pulled to one extreme, instead of going towards the middle, you should err on the other direction, so that in order to find, in order, like a rubber band, in order to bounce back, sometimes you have to stretch to the opposite direction. And the Rambam concludes by saying, "Vizehu chok rifuat hamidot vizachrehu." This is the law. This is the notion. This is the manner of repairing one's personality. Vizachrehu, and it's worthy of your reviewing it, remembering it, keeping it in mind. Of course, the Rambam is doing a kind of oversimplification. We can't put our personalities into a kind of what's the word? This is the same word I forgot last time. Why am I blanking on this word? You know, that thing that you put the elements into so that it separates out into the component parts. What's the word? No, what's the word? Why am I blanking on it? You know, in chemistry, when you put the elements into this thing and it spins around and it breaks them up into their centrifuge. You can't put your personality into a personality centrifuge and look at like the disparate midot. And the Rambam is certainly aware of this, that your midot are more like a cholent, that you can't except once it's all cooked together, you can't really separate them out. They've all melded into one whole personality. And although it's possible to work on specific components of who you are, really it's quite a large and complicated package. But for conceptual purposes, the Rambam divides it into this sense of these disparate spectra that you have to weigh each one. But in reality, it's much more of a cohesive whole. By way of review, let's just look over quickly the Rambam's Hilchot Deot. I've mentioned before that Hilchot Deot, which appears in the Mishneh Torah, in the first section in Sefer Mad of the Mishneh Torah, Hilchot Deot is the Rambam's halachic rendering of the material that he writes about in the Shmona Prakim. The Shmona Prakim, again, is the work of his youth. It's included in the Perish HaMishnah, which is a work that the Rambam finished writing by the time he was 30, which is a thought that I always find, you know, very daunting, that he finished writing it when he was 30. I don't know how old you all are, but I'm on the other side of 30. For my 30th birthday, I undertook to learn all of Mishnayot, to make a siyum on in a, over the course of that year, to make a siyum on Shas Mishnayot, because I was so daunted by the idea that by the time he was 30, the Rambam had not only done that probably a few times, but had written the first comprehensive Perush on the Mishnah. And not that we have to compete with the Rambam, but it's a worthy project to undertake to make a siyum on Shas Mishnayot, whether you do it in a year or in 2 years or in however long it takes you. So the Mishneh Torah is a work of later period in his life, and it's a halachic distillation of the same ideas. The Rambam is talking. It's by halachic, I mean it's philosophic, but it's encoded into a work and a language of halacha, of normative behavior. The Rambam says, "Deot harbeyesh l'kol echad ve'echad mibnei adam." Each person has many different deot. Again, I will translate deot as personality traits. That's a non-literal translation, but I think that's what the Rambam means. Many people have many different personality traits. Zu mishuna mizu v'rachoko mimenu biyoter. Yesh adam shehu bal chema ko'es tamid. So there's some people who are just very angry by nature, always hot-headed. And then there are people that are mishune zu mizu, different than this. And then there are people who are cool as a cucumber. They never get angry. Or they'll get angry once every, a little bit, once every couple of years. I'm sure we're all just like that, I'm sure. And there's some people that are very arrogant. And there's some people who are very lowly, right? Not modest. The opposite of arrogance is not modesty. The opposite of arrogance is to have complete lack of self-worth. Modesty is the center point. Modesty is the fulcrum. Modesty is the golden mean. Modesty doesn't mean that you think you're a nothing. On the contrary, modesty requires you to know your self-worth, but not to let that allow the overpowering of ego. He gives a number of other examples, many of which he'd already given us in the Shmona Prakim. Halacha Bet. V'yesh ben kol dea v'dea harechoka mimenu b'katzeh ha'acher deot benoniot, zu rechoka mizu. And for each spectra that we look at, a sense of personal worth with arrogance at one end and complete lack of self-worth on the other, with modesty in the middle, anger, any of these spectrum that he gives examples of, there's a midpoint, which is, I mean, he's speaking in a kind of mathematical metaphor, which is equidistant between the two extremes. For kol ha-deot yesh mehem deot shehein la'adam mitchilat b'riyato lefi teva gufo. And everybody has, by inclination, by their natural inclination, by their very nature, everybody has different deot according to how they're born, what they're like. V'yesh mehem deot shetivo shel adam ze michuvan v'atid lekabel otam b'mehera yoter mishar deot. And then there are acquired traits. There are acquired personality traits. There's some things that you can acquire very easily through influence. The Rambam is very clear. It's both nature and nurture. We are products of both nature and nurture. V'yesh mehem she'ein an la'adam mitchilat b'riyoto ela lamadota me'acherim oshin if not lehem me'atzmo l'fi machshava she'alta b'libo. And then there are other character traits which are not built in, not part of his personality DNA, but he learns them from others, or he imbibes them by himself, a kind of conscious decision. There's certain things that you pick up from your surroundings, from your society. In the sixth chapter of Hilchot Deot, the Rambam discusses this, discusses the sense of how we are influenced by those around us, by how we're influenced by society, how we're influenced by peer group. But he also says that there are things that we can influence ourselves. So there are different forces that impact on who we are and how we act. There's our natural inclinations, the kind of person we are when we're born. Any of you that are parents know this. You look at your kids, not when they're born. I remember when our kids were born, when they were like little babies. We like looked at them, and you know, particularly like your firstborn, when you're your first time parents, you look at them and you say, like, I wonder what they're going to be like when they grow up. I wonder what they're going to look like when they grow up. And then as they grow up, our oldest, we made a bar mitzvah last summer. So that we look at him and we say, you know, you can now like unravel layers of the onion, and you can say he's always been like that from the day he was born. There were other things he may have done that he stopped doing that we either no longer remember or we're unaware that he's no longer. But there's certain things, certain little facial expressions that you look at the 13-year-old and you can still see deep down the one day old baby that he once was. There's certain things that are just built in, and if it's true of your physical traits, it's also true of your personality. Whether a person is naturally calm and happy, or cranky and angry, or there's certain things that are just built in. And then there are things that you acquire from what you're exposed to. That's why, of course, it's always important to have good friends. Like the Mishnah says, "Aseh lecha rav v'kaneh lecha chaver," the importance of your peer group and the people that you interact with, intellectually, socially, morally, mentally, spiritually. This is a profound impact on who you're going to be. And that choice, which I guess when you're young is made for you primarily by your parents, but as you get older is something that you take over for yourself. That choice of who you choose to continue to expose yourself to is very important, because it impacts on that chulent of midot that are mixing around inside of you. And then finally the Rambam says there's the impact of the person on himself, that you can make and that sometimes is of course influenced by one or the other or both of the two prior influences. You can make a decision to consciously move in a certain direction. Sometimes we make decisions to move in a certain direction that are the wrong choices, that lead us towards an unhealthy kind of personal growth. But you can make certain choices that you shenafna lehem mi'atzmo l'fi machshava she'alta b'libo. It occurs to you, from whatever impetus may have been, it occurs to you to try to develop yourself in a certain way and to internalize certain notions. Oh, Shishama Shizu Dea Tovalo, Uvaru Ilelech, Vinhig Atzmoba, Ad Shinikba Blibo. Again, referring back to what the Rambam had said earlier, that the way to work on your personality is, again, a very behavioralistic point of view. I think last time I compared it to Pavlov's dog, that we can condition ourselves, that we can condition ourselves to act in a certain way, we can condition ourselves to be better. I mean, similarly, we can condition ourselves to be worse, to act improperly. But we can condition ourselves to act properly or to act better or to be more refined or to be more patient or fill in the blank, primarily through repeated action. The Rambam then goes on, Shtek tzavot harachokot zu mizu shebechol deya v'deya, einan derech tova. The extremes of any personality trait are not good. Neither extreme is ever good. V'ein ro'oi lo la'adam la'lechet b'hem. It's improper to accustom yourself to act in those ways. V'lo la'lamdan la'tzmo. You can't act that way, and you can't literally teach yourself to act that way. You shouldn't aim to acquire those. V'im matzativ o not'e la'achat mihen o muchan la'achat mihen. If you discover that you have an inclination towards one of the extremes on any of the spectra, or that you are by nature, either you're inclined by desire, by interest, or you're inclined by nature. Oh, shekvar lamad achat mehen, or you've already been won over to the dark side of the force. V'nahagba v'yachzir atzmo lemuta v'yelech b'derech hatovim v'hi derech hayishera. So you have to undertake the act of correction in order to get back to the middle, to the straight path, what the Rambam calls the path of the good, the straight path. Excuse me. The Haderech Yeshera hi Mida Beinonit. And now this is summarizing what I said a moment earlier. The straight path is the center path. Shebechol Deya V'Deya. Between each and every trait. And then he describes this at some length. And he says, V'hu Adeya Shehi Rechoka Mishtei Hakatzavot Lefichach Tzivu Chachamim. Since the middle path is the proper path, Tzivu Chachamim Arishonim Shehi Adam Sham Deotav Tamid U'Mishe'er Otam U'Mechaven Otam B'Derech Ha'Emtzait Kedei Shehi Shalem B'Gufo. Chazal said, "Sham shehe adam sham deotav tamid." Sham, this word sham, it doesn't mean there. It's from the same shorish as shamai. Shamai like Hillel and Shamai. There's a name that comes from the same shorish. Or shamai. Let's say, for example, you have a fender bender with your car. So what do? You take the car to the garage. And you want to have insurance pay for it, so the garage doesn't just fix it; they have to have the shamai. They have to have the shamai come and assess the damage, and then the insurance company can determine how much they're prepared to pay for the repair of the car minus whatever your deductible is. So in modern Hebrew, a shamai is an assessor, like an insurance assessor or a tax assessor. They come around to determine how much your house is worth and how much you should pay in taxes. Shamaut, sham, is to assess. It's not from the same, it's a completely different shorish as sham over there. So a person should, sham deotav tamid, you should always be doing this kind of assessment. This notion that even when, before the Rambam was talking about the necessity to be in balance, and if you're out of whack, to get put back into whack. If you're out of kilter, to get back into kilter. It's like, you go to the chiropractor. You need an adjustment, and he plays around with your vertebrae until everything is straight and in line, and it turns out it clears up all your problems. So the Rambam is saying that it's not enough to get into balance, but it's like those tightrope walkers. Tightrope walking isn't just about getting from point A to point B. every step and every movement along the way requires a kind of radar. The tightrope walker has to have such intimate knowledge and connection to every single movement of every hair on his head, of every movement of every muscle in order to keep the balance. That's a good metaphor for what the Rambam is describing, this act of shamaut. All of your personality traits. How many personality traits are you? I don't know. The Rambam's given different examples, both in the Shmona Brakim and here in the Hilchot Deot. Maybe he's given a dozen different examples. But those are just examples. How many personality traits are there? 5 dozen? 10 dozen? Who knows? Each one might have subcategories. The act of that kind of assessing your personality to make sure that you are in balance, that's the real work. Meaning, even if you're healthy, if you're not in balance, if you have real personality defects, you have to work on getting back into equilibrium. But even when you're in equilibrium, you're only ever in the equilibrium of the tightrope walker. Meaning, at any moment you could fall. You're on the seesaw. At any moment, the thing can go out of balance. And it's more complicated than that, because human personality is very complicated. What's a seesaw? You and I are on either ends of the seesaw. You go up, I go down, I go up, you go down. If I jiggle or if I move my position on the seesaw, I can affect, what's going on. But the human personality is so much more complicated than the visual metaphor of the seesaw or the visual metaphor of the of Moznayim, of scales. It's more like the example of, I think I've given this once before, I don't know whether here or in a previous discussion, of that image of the cat in the hat. You know which one I'm talking about? The cat in the hat who's juggling the ball, who's juggling the ball on the, who's standing on a ball. Here it is. Here's the image. I mean, you all know this image. I'll put it in the chat. There you go. Right? Look at the chat. Look at the link in the chat. He's bounce. He's keeping his balance on one foot on a ball while waving a fan in his tail, with a platter of milk on a foot, a stack of books on another, the cake on his hat, the rake and the umbrella and the goldfish bowl and etc. That's what the human personality is like. It's this tempest of all different types of things, and we're constantly being bombarded by different input and stimuli and interactions with other people, and the infinite. If we're a cat on the hat bouncing on the ball with the rake and the fish and the birthday cake on the hat, so every person that we encounter is similarly complex, but complex in their own ways, and every human interaction provides the opportunity for either or both of us to come crashing down. It's amazing that we don't do that more often. It's amazing that we don't come crashing down more often. And the work of keeping on the balance, it's not like the balance of, somebody who's laying down on the floor. When you're laying down on the floor, you're in like this state of complete entropy, nothing, like gravity can't do any more to you. You can't fall down. You're in a pretty secure state. But that's not what life is. Life is balancing on the ball. And the act of constantly fine-tuning, you know, how it's going, and is everything, you know, are all the balls being juggled in the air, or are you about to come crashing down? That's the work of Hilchot Deot. Ah, that's an excellent question that Lee asks. If you're not in balance, like, how do you even know if you're not in balance? So part of the work, of being in balance, part of the work of having your midot correct is a sense of, you know, part of it is you have to develop the sense of self-reflection, and to know if you're, you know, to know if you're healthy. You know, healthy people, you know, people who are really healthy, like they're very in tune. I'm talking physical health. They often tend to be very much in tune with their physical health, and if they like eat something that's nuts. I'm not in such good shape, unfortunately, and I could eat, like, you know, a lot of chazarai, a lot of junk food, and it doesn't make me feel good, but it doesn't throw me off balance either, because I'm so off balance. But somebody who's really, really healthy, you feed them, you know, one bag of potato chips, and they're gonna feel awful, because they're very, very in tune to their, you know, to their bodies. So part of the work of what you do, what we're supposed to be doing, is to be similarly in tune. I mean, the Rambam also feels that you should be physically in tune with yourself, but to be spiritually, mentally, morally in tune as well. But beyond your own level of self-awareness that you ought to strive to develop, Sherry's correct. The Rambam will go on to say, that's why it's particularly necessary to live in society and to live in a healthy society, because interactions with other people serve as a mirror back onto ourselves to help us understand. And if that's true for the peer group, it's even more true for having a relationship with what the Rambam in this context calls chachamim. Chachamim are teachers, mentors, rabbis, people who are a little further developed, a little higher on the spiritual ladder, because they can serve as mashgichim. If all of these ideas seem to resonate with what we know about the Musar movement and more modern developments, they hearken back to the Rambam. The Musar movement pointed to Hilchot Deot and the Shmona Prakim, etc., as foundational texts in what they were trying to do. So these, all of these components, your own self-reflection, your own kind of sense of testing the, you know, testing the waters of your own spiritual health. I don't want to say mental health, your spiritual health. For the Rambam, mental health is part of physical health. This is part of your spiritual health. But also the reliance and the benefit of interaction with peer groups, and more so with spiritual mentors, these are the things that are necessary. And that's why, again, it's important. That's why the notion of how to build a healthy society and what the components of a healthy society are also make an appearance here later on in Hilchot Deot. Lee asks, if you have a natural inclination to an extreme, you're born with it, for example, you've always been that way, how do you know you're inclined that way? So in other words, you could mean, in other words, if you have a natural sweet tooth, so you know that you have a natural sweet tooth. If you have a natural inclination to anything, I mean, any type of genetic, you know, people that have some, you know, there are two types of people that are heavy set. The people that are heavy set because they don't exercise and because they eat poorly. That seems to be my problem. than there are people that are heavy set because they're just genetically inclined to be chunky. That's the way they were born. That's the way they were their whole life. You can be naturally inclined to something and still be self-aware that that's your case, even though you've been that way your whole life. People who are naturally angry people, and they've been that way their whole life, doesn't mean they're not aware of that. On the contrary, they're probably aware that that's what's been causing much of their grief and sorrow and aggravation, for their whole lives. They may or may not feel powerless to change it, but that doesn't mean that they're not aware of it. And that's part of what living in society is. Other people are going to help you discover your flaws because you're such an obnoxious person. The Rambam will go on. I want to skip a little bit because the truth is we only have one more session together next Thursday night. This, just again as a programming note, this series will continue next semester in Web Yeshiva, but it's moving from Thursday night to my normal Tuesday night slot, which is Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. Jerusalem time, 3 p.m. New York time. You can do the math for wherever else you are on the planet on your own. And we'll continue from where we left off, but I want to kind of summarize a couple of ideas before we come to an end this semester. The Rambam says that a person who does the work and who finds himself in equilibrium and at a state that you can maintain that. And again, even when you can maintain it, you're never completely at rest. You always need the work. I always compared it to, it's a metaphor which only works for those of us of a certain age. You remember the old televisions before cable TV when we were kids or when I was a kid? Alan, when you were a kid, I can't speak for anyone else. And there was the dial that switched the channel from like the couple of broadcast networks that there were. And then there was another dial that had the fine tuning, like on a radio, not a digital radio, but like people still have these radios. We have to tune in the thing and you can get to it, but it's not completely without static and you have to fiddle with it. So I remember in the house that I was a kid, you'd turn the channel and you'd fine tune it so that it would come in focus and clear. And then if somebody would turn on the vacuum cleaner or something in the house, it would like whack out the TV and you'd have to refocus it. Because somehow plugging in a heavy electrical appliance on the same circuits would make everything right. Or if they'd walk too close, if they'd bump into the antenna. So that's what life is. After you get it into focus, somebody's going to walk too close, they're going to bump into the antenna, or they're going to turn on a different appliance in the house, and you have to constantly refocus. And if you don't do anything, the only thing you can be sure of is next time you go on the TV, it's come out of focus again. Again, I apologize to those of you who can no longer relate to this metaphor. So Ram said that's the ongoing work. Even when you're in balance, even when everything's 100%, that's the ongoing work of fine-tuning. The Rambam says, V'derech zu, hi derech ha-chachamim. Kol adam sh'deotav deot benoniot, mimutzaot nikra chacham. A wise person, and for the Rambam, wisdom is, not just merely important, it is the aspiration of our spiritual existence. That if you are able to get all of your personality traits in a line and you're walking in the middle, you are a chacham. You are a chacham. There are two personality traits which the Rambam will then make an exception for and say that in those two traits, it's not sufficient to be in the middle, you have to go a little extra, because one of the extremes on that spectrum is particularly dangerous. Does anyone know what those traits are, or anybody want to venture a guess? For the Rambam, what are the two most particularly negative personality traits? Correct. Anger is one of them. And correct, gava, arrogance. Arrogance is the other. Why are those two particular traits, ka'as v'ga'ava, anger and arrogance, why for the Rambam are they so particularly dangerous? Why are they so particularly, they're like the personality black holes. Their gravity is so strong it'll suck anything in. Why are they so particularly dangerous that he's prepared to say that the center road is not enough, that you have to err a little bit on the other side? What's the danger of those particular flaws, arrogance and anger? You lose sight of God, correct, but there might be a way to sharpen that. That's a different question. How do you determine the minimal acceptance for anger? That's a different question. We'll get to that. Why are anger and arrogance so... Anger in moderation is unacceptable. Lee says, because you become the focal point instead of God, which is... correct. It's another. That's Alan had said that you lose sight of God. It's, you're saying similar things in different directions. For the Rambam, all of this work, all of this kind of personality work, is about becoming a chacham. What does it mean, a chacham? Chacham doesn't mean you do well on the SATs. A chacham means that you have opened yourself, you've developed your potential to know God.
Kiddies, I'm teaching. Please be quiet.
To know God. What does it mean to know God? It's the first four words in the Mishneh Torah, Yisod HaYisodot V'Amud HaChachamot, the foundation of all foundations, the pillar of all wisdom, Leida Sheyesham Elokim. The Rambam does not command us to believe in God, but to know Him, to develop our intellect in such a way that we are receptive to knowledge of God. At the highest form of development is Nivu'ah, is prophecy, which is a kind of knowledge which flows directly, like a broadband connection, instead of the knowledge of sending things by snail mail. Arrogance and anger are two dispositions that shut off the brain. For different reasons, each for their own reason. As Sherry writes, there's no room for knowledge of God if you're angry or arrogant. Right, but why? Because when you're angry or when you're arrogant, the network has collapsed. The internet is down. You become so focused, generally, inwardly, that you shut off the receptors to anything else, and you're cutting off that channel to God. Now, this is not true for the other midot. The extremes of the other midot are also very bad. And they might be like the difference between on your internet connection, whether you get 5 bars or 4 bars, 5 bars or 3 bars. You know, like you take your laptop to a cafe or something and you're sitting there and your internet connection, you only have like that one minimal bar and it's enough to like get your email, but you can't really do much else. But at least you're still connected. Arrogance and anger, it's like your hard drive has crashed. I may be overusing this whole computer metaphor, but I think you get the point. Right, and it's part of it is that it's the complete monopoly of the ego, that you only see things from your own point of view. When you become very, very angry. What do we say about somebody who's like so completely filled with rage? Say like they become irrational. They become irrational. You can't reason with them. Well, for the Rambam, reason and rationality are the hallmarks of wisdom, of chokhmah. Arrogance, of course, is just the complete eclipsing of your ego on everything else, so that you can't be open to you can't be receptive to God. So for the Rambam, arrogance and ego become these two exceptions to the rule. And we will next time, hopefully, get into this question of if this is the center, if this is the middle path of the Chacham, are there other attributes which are developed or become goals that are somehow not exactly in the center path? And we'll continue that next time, which will be our last meeting this semester. And then after whatever the Web Yeshiva break is, we'll continue on. I hope you'll continue with us. We'll be continuing on Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock Israel time when we pick up again, and we'll continue the work together in the Shmona Prakim. Shabbat Shalom.